Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back to the hockey game. So Pavel Zacha got the – okay, so the first period, as we mentioned, the Bruins got off to a good start. But the rest of the period was pretty slow. I think they had 9 shots through 20 or most of the first 20. What did you see happen to them after such a strong start? They had a power play. They didn't do much with it. It was almost kind of deflated them a little bit. What did you think kind of went wrong for them the rest of the first period that kind of after that early lead?
Well, penalties for one. I mean, they just started racking up one penalty after another. And, you know, a couple of them were needed. You know, Lindholm's is – they're on a power play, but he has to take an interference because the rush is going the other way. Hathaway just missed a check and ends up with a kneeing penalty. So I didn't think they were like super undisciplined, but that definitely hurt. That clearly like killed their momentum because I thought they were the better 5-on-5 team most of the night, but you just start constantly going on the penalty kill and really broke their momentum. Their penalty kill was good. Winnipeg finished the game 0-for-5. So, you know, an improvement for at least that half of the special teams equation. But yeah, it did throw them off their 5-on-5 game. I thought it took a little while after kind of getting out of all those penalties for them to sort of get back on track and start to play well again. But the good news is that they didn't give up a goal during any of that. Swayman played really well and, you know, sneaky important game for him because he'd been a little subpar the past two games, definitely Sunday and that loss to Detroit, but even that Thursday game against Edmonton, you know, especially that last goal where he kind of misplays the puck behind the net. So, you know, I thought this was one of his better games of the season and just, you know, really strong bounce back that, you know, you wanted to see from him. You don't want him to start potentially slipping at this point in the season.
Yeah, and I'll choose to pick up there because I think Scott's right about the penalty thing causing that first to be a little bit weird. And also, it was 7 shots in the first period for the Bruins. So on goal, at least. Their first shot on goal was the goal. I guess it was like, what, 50 seconds in? Really early goal for Frederick. But to pick up on the Swayman topic of conversation, he played so well. Third shutout of this season, looked great. Had the one weird thing I thought though was there was like 3 or so times where he had his glove closed and then dropped the puck and it like popped back out. I don't know what necessarily was going on with that. One time he got a quick whistle, so it didn't matter. And another time it like bounced out in front and one of the Bruins defensemen cleared it out of the way. But other than that, really strong game from him. Deserved the shutout at the end of the game when Hellebuck was pulled. I'm thinking, oh, what if he goes for it? What if he goes for that empty net? And then I'm just thinking to myself, well, he probably just cares about the shutout. But in the back of his head, he was thinking,
oh no, he wants a goal. If there had been a chance, he definitely would have gone for it.
Luckily for Winnipeg, there wasn't a clean chance at it for him, but Nosek ended up scoring an empty netter. So,
yeah, he did. Before we get to the, I want to get to the top line or the Bergeron line in a bit, but before we do, I think we'll just touch on the Zacha goal again, or not again, but Zaka scores again. And it was just a, the latest example of him trusting his shot, using his shot more. And it led to his career high in goals. I think it was his 18th goal of the season. And just, I mean, again, he's just been such a pleasant addition to this team this year. Thoughts on him giving the Bruins a 2-0 lead and in the fashion that he did it.
Yeah, we've seen it all season. He has a really good shot and he can score from distance. And, you know, you don't have, no team has like a ton of guys who can do that. But he's done it quite a bit and does it there with just a great snapshot up over Hellebuck's shoulder. Yeah, like that's when we were talking about, like, you know, Zaka versus Bertuzzi, like we were talking about this on Sunday Skate, you know, we touched on the podcast as well. You know, like the difference between what Zaka brings to that line versus Bertuzzi. And it's like, they're both good playmakers, but Zaka has that ability to score from distance. Whereas I think obviously we haven't seen Bertuzzi score yet at all with the Bruins, but when he does score, he's a guy who had 30 goals last year. It's a lot from in close. So it's just, you know, a little bit different dynamic. And I think Zaka plays well on that line because they play so much off the rush that if you have a guy who can score, you know, from the circles or even, you know, a little outside it, like that's dangerous for a rush line. Jim Montgomery has said how he accepts that, you know, that line might go chance for chance and he trusts them because he thinks they're going to come out on top because they're just more talented. Well, like that's how they're more talented. Obviously Pastrnak can do it. We know that, but when you have the other wing who can also score from distance off the rush, like that's, you know, that's how you end up dramatically outscoring the opposition, even if you're trading chance for chance.
Yeah. And it's important to have that longer shot score off the rush. And it's dangerous because that means you can get the shot off before defense can get in position. So you're going to catch them a little bit off guard. You might even catch, you know, the goaltender off guard. Especially when we're talking about a goalie that's as good as Hellebuck. And unfortunately for Bertuzzi, his shot goes off the post and out, but Zaka's went off the post and in today's game. So, I mean, he's had his best season goal-wise. Frederick, who also scored, is well beyond his best season goal-wise. Now he scored his 15th. So, I mean, you're seeing a lot of guys this year just put up numbers that they haven't been able to in the past.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That is true. It's been a team-wide effort. Everybody's been kind of playing to their ceiling and then some. But with that said, I do want to bring up the Bergeron line at this point because, you know, ever so often I watch the Bruins and I think to myself, because they do so many things well, and the guys we're talking about are so important to this team and they're all world players. But this is the second time this year that I can recall that they've gone through a significant dry spell. And when I mean them, I mean Bergeron and Marchand in particular. I think the first time DeBrusk was out of the lineup, but they've been quiet. There's no doubt about it. We know the power play struggles for this team, right? So the power play hasn't been clicking. So it's not like in the past we're like, okay, maybe 5-on-5 they're down, but they're on the power play scoring. The scoring's down all the way around for those guys right now. And dating back the last 6 games for the Bruins, so that is the Rangers game, the Oilers game, both Detroit games, Chicago, and tonight against the Jets. The last 6 games for the Bruins, Marchand, Bergeron, and DeBrusk have a combined 7 points in an 18 combined games, right? 6 games per guy. So I guess just like this isn't the first time this year they've struggled. Is it a sign of them just being a little bit older at this stage in their career, obviously not DeBrusk, or is it injury or ailment, or are they pacing themselves? In those last 6 games, Marchand has 3 points and the other 2 each have 2 points respectively. So just what are your thoughts on that line? Clearly they're not clicking on all cylinders right now.
Can I go first?
Go.
Okay. So I think I honestly am not sure, Brian, to answer your question. Is it fatigue? Is it, you know, pacing themselves? I don't I actually don't really think it was any of the things you listed. I think they might just be a little bit off. And in particular, Marshawn, who has one goal in the last eight games, and that's not really a pace that he's usually at a quicker pace than that. I think as a line, they kind of just look like they're, and maybe it's that defenses know what to expect from them. And the matchups that they're getting are obviously good matchups. You know, they're seeing other teams' best defenders, at times. So, you know, they're going up against the hardest players to play against defensively. So, that might be part of it, but as a whole, they haven't been able to generate as much as usual, get the passing going as much as usual. Maybe teams have kind of solved them a little bit. But I don't think it's fatigue or age or anything like that. I'd be surprised if it was, and I don't think that they're like, I don't know. I don't think they're lacking, you know, inspiration as much as, well, they could be a little bit, but maybe just they're getting team's best defensive efforts and they're just a little bit off.
I mean, I think the biggest factor is that Brad Marchand still isn't himself. And
yeah,
he told us that. He told us that a couple of weeks ago. He said that he thought he would feel better than he did after getting a double hip surgery in the off season. And he said, you know, he just hasn't felt like he's been able to get back to like being the player he was the last six seasons, where yeah, like he might be slightly under a point per game now, but he's basically been right around a point per game all season. But that's down from where he had been. Like he had been 90 to 100 points over 80 game seasons, not, you know, 80 point pace or 75 point pace. And he said, you know, he just felt like he couldn't really be as completely in control of the puck when he's on it, and, you know, in control of kind of play when he's out on the ice. And I think that's it. Like, it, not to say it's all about him or, you know, it has nothing to do with Bergeron and DeBrusk. Like, yeah, I'm sure those guys can be better too, but when and if that line is at its best, it's Marchand driving it. Like, he's the one over, you know, for the last several seasons who's been the best offense. Him and Pastrnak are the best offensive players on the team. And Marchand really hasn't been for stretches of this season. And we know why. And he said he doesn't regret getting the surgery. He needed to get it. Otherwise his career could end much sooner than he wanted. But it was a major surgery and he's still not 100% himself. And I think, you know, I don't know if he's going to get there before the playoffs. I don't know if it, you know, it might take a full regular off season of regular training, because that's the other thing. It's not just the surgery and what that does to your body. It's you lose your entire off season. You lose everything you usually do to get ready for a season, and trying to do all that during the season is a lot tougher. So, you know, to me, that's the biggest factor. And I think, you know, I think the silver lining is that they, for once, you know, unlike previous years, they have the depth scoring. They have a second, third line, even a fourth line. They have defensemen involved on offense. So you don't have to rely on that line. The other silver lining is they're still not giving up goals. They are one of the best defensive lines in the NHL. So at the very least, they're breaking even pretty much every night. So, you know, how they use that in the playoffs and whether or not they get going offensively at some point remains to be seen. Obviously, it makes the team a whole, you know, hell of a lot scarier if they do start to turn on offensively and Marchand starts looking like himself. But yeah, for now, it hasn't really happened yet.
And can I just point out a stat that I did the math on while Scott was talking. So he's on pace for 27 to 28 goals, depending on how you round, which would be the fewest goals in a season for him if he has 27 in eight seasons. So, I mean, obviously he missed time in the beginning, so that's going to factor in. But we're looking at a lot of seasons where he has over 30 goals, and right now he's at 20 and on pace to have about 27 or 28. So if you go back and look at those stats, the stats kind of bear that out. Obviously, if he doesn't miss the first month plus of the season, those numbers look different. But just as a point of reference to what the numbers might look like at the end of the season for him, might be right around 27.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that he missed the first month, right? So you could safely assume that would be probably mid-30s, right, otherwise. But for me, it's not even the goals or lack thereof. It's like, does he look like Marchand out there? And clearly he doesn't, and the reasons are justified, right? And Scott listed all of them off, and I'm not here to bash one of their best players at all. I guess what I'm simply saying is, and Scott, you mentioned, like, well, this Bruins team is different. They can weather it because they have the depth. And I agree with that. The problem is, if you go into a playoff series or a playoff season, you can't have your depth scoring turn into your primary scoring. It's only depth scoring if your primary scoring is scoring, right? I mean, I know that's kind of – you can look at it both ways, right? If your depth scoring isn't scoring and your primary scoring isn't scoring, you have no scoring. I get that. I know. I'm just saying I don't think this Bruins team can win a Stanley Cup if those guys aren't producing significantly more than they are right now. And I'm concerned because I agree with the reasons that you listed off, and I don't blame him for not being the 110-point guy that he was a few years ago, because he didn't have a full off season of training. He didn't have a full preseason. He didn't have a first month of the season. I understand all that. So, but the reality is the playoffs do start in a month. So can he get to that level? And I think it's unfair to assume that he will just because the playoffs are starting. So that's why I think it could be reason for concern a little bit.
And DeBrusk, let's not forget, I have no idea what the recovery is like for, you know, what bone did he break?
No. Is the
funny bone? No.
Either way.
Whichever the smaller of the bones in the lower leg is. I always get them confused. So.
Me too. That's the problem. But anyway, I have no idea what the rest.
I broke one of them and I still get them confused.
A skiing accident, by the way. Not a bar fight or anything like that. But no, I don't know what the recovery time on that is either, and what the recovery process for something like that is. I mean, you got to imagine breaking something like that and you're putting so much force on your legs when you're like cutting at your edge and when you're skating. So, I mean, just take that into consideration as well. I doubt DeBrusk would say he's 100%. I'm sure he feels pretty good, but that's another, you know, thing to think about when we talk about that line as well, because he's coming back after missing quite a chunk of time. And he took a little bit longer to come back than they originally thought. So, I guess those are all things to put into the equation of why that line might be struggling a little bit right now. But I want to change subjects to
before you do on the, as far as like, you know, you need your top scorers. I think it's pretty, like, it's safe to say at this point that their primary scoring line is the check line.
Yeah.
And has been all season. Those are their top 3 5-on-5 scorers. So I think like you almost have to like look at it a little different than years past, where it's like, yeah, the Bergeron-Marchand line is always going to be listed first on the depth chart, and they might get more minutes and, you know, tougher matchups and all that. But the Zacha, Krejci, Pastrnak line, like, that's the one that's going to need to score. Like, when you talk about, you know, you need your top scores, yes, I think at some point you're also going to need Marchand, Bergeron, DeBrusk to be going offensively. But to me, like, Zacha, Krejci, Pastrnak's, That has become the line that you need consistently going. Like, that's, at least offensively, that's your top line.
Yeah, and 5-on-5, you mentioned 5-on-5. Remember last year at the end of the season, I feel like we were putting up articles constantly and talking constantly about how they couldn't get things going 5-on-5. And now all of a sudden they can't get things going on the power play, and their 5-on-5 play is, you know, among top in the league. So it's just kind of funny. And obviously we talked about the different pieces they have this year and the depth that they have this year that helps them be able to do that. I mean, the check line you only had one member on that team last season. So we're talking about different pieces because you don't have Zaka, you don't have Krejci last year to add to that mix.
By the way, I tweeted this, so if you guys saw it, then it's going to be spoiled, but I mentioned the top three 5-on-5 scorers are Pastrnak 1, Krejci and Zaka now tied for 2. You know who's fourth in 5-on-5 points?
Lindholm?
Who'd you say the first three were? Oh, is it Lindholm? Did you say, is it Lindholm? No, Coyle?
No.
What were the options? Who were the first three?
First three were Pastrnak 1, Krejci and Zaka tied for 2nd.
Yeah, I feel like it's Coyle, no?
Yeah. Coyle? Charlie Coyle, 4th in 5-on-5 points.
Pride of Weymouth, man. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Pride of the South Shore Kings, 92s.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect forever.